Welcome to The Sharing Culture, the show that talks about sharing, who does it, why, the history, and a whole lot in between. I'm your host and executive director of Equitable Giving Circle, AJ McCrary, and today we're talking about sharing from a youth perspective with the one and only Mr. Sean Hobbs Waters. We have a book recommendation and a sharing activity for you today as well, so make sure that you listen all the way through so that you don't miss out, and I'm looking forward to sharing with you all today. Welcome, welcome, Mr. Sean Hobbs Waters.
Thanks, Mom.
So Sean Hobbs is my son, my 16-year-old. He also happens to be EGC's unofficial intern and has been a great help in all kinds of different ways on this journey. He definitely was rolling his eyes like a true teenager. But you have been a great help in all kinds of different ways, from like recently helping with some website updates, helped with our care package this year. We were packing things late into the night, and you were helping wrangle our other unofficial intern, the wonderful, spectacular Omari, who is almost seven. Yeah. And you do other stuff. You help with all kinds of different things, and are a great helper. You're also an activist in town, an artist. Look at that smile. You are an artist, a visual artist, and a ballet dancer. And you do quite a few other activities. You are newly appointed to the Oregon Black Pioneers Board. You have participated in some... was that budget board for PPS?
Yeah, the CBRC.
The CBRC. And you are one of the youngest facilitators at Race Talks. You started facilitating with them, what, you were?
I was 12.
12. He's an all-around superstar, and I'm excited to talk to you today, particularly about your experience with sharing and your perspectives, and learn a little bit about some of your goals and what have you. I mean, I know them because I am your mother, but I'm just excited to hear some of those things from your voice in this platform. And again, thank you for being here and entertaining me. I love to keep my kiddo close and participating in all of my adventures. He's a pretty good participant. Did I miss anything in introducing you? I'm super proud of this kid and absolutely think he is the bee's knees. And there are lots of people that agree with me. So
I don't think you miss anything. I definitely would not consider myself an activist. I would just say I'm a concerned private citizen.
Oh, my gosh.
I know that sounds like that makes me sound like a vigilante or something like that.
That sounds concerning. He's at the windows peeking out, making sure that the neighborhood is safe and quiet. Oh, Lord.
Neighborhood watch over here.
Mrs. Kravitz, was that her name? Well, but you are an activist. You are actively talking about moving our community forward and interested in development. And interested in liberation, yeah?
Yeah.
It's cool, though, that you don't identify as activist. I'm not going to shove that down your throat. That sounds awful. Your visual art that you do is very, very talkative regarding both history and social justice issues.
Yeah, absolutely. And right now, I'm kind of really focused on taking my interest in urban policy and urban issues and incorporating that into my art practice. That's something that I want to explore more about. And art is sort of my platform, or one of my platforms. And I would like to kind of share my ideas with community just about urbanism and the built environment through my art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couple, was it 2 years ago, you made a painting, that beautiful heart painting with Heart and Hustle, and then you raffled it off and donated it to EGC. And I can't remember the person who got it.
Someone named Joe Brickman or something like that.
Well, if you're out there, Joe, thank you for supporting both the kid and EGC. And come hang out, volunteer. We'd love to see you. wherever you are. always trying to get more people to participate. We got to get you to do another one of those. That was a great little fundraiser. Yeah, I would love for you to share some more of your art with us. I made like giving sound so generous and fun. Just share. You're also a ballet dancer. So you're a specific kind of dancer.
That is correct.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about your ballet?
Yeah. I've been dancing since I was 7 years old. Well, since I was eight. I was on the cusp of being eight. It was like the week before I turned eight.
Oh, okay.
So it's I've been dancing since I was seven, really eight. I started.
He's a Virgo, so very, very particular about keeping things straight and together and clear.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
I started dancing in New Orleans at a after school program, and I quickly fell in love with it.
The first day that he did it, I stood in this long line to get him in this class, and I didn't need to do that. And the very first day of ballet, this kid came out elated. He was like, "This is my thing."
And so when I was nine, I don't even remember what the catalyst for this was, but I was in class. We were doing some bar work, and I decided that I wanted to do dance professionally. And yeah, ever since then, I've gotten more serious with it, training around the country. I'm actually preparing to do a summer program with the Dance Theater Harlem, which is a program in New York this summer.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I'm very proud of you. You are a beautiful dancer. And again, I'm not just saying that because I'm your mom. Like, there is some of that, but you really are an incredible dancer. You're fun to watch. Yeah. And if I tried to do that, I would probably end up in the hospital. Just keeping it real. I'm impressed with all of the dancers that we get to see along the way. It's really cool. It's to see like the athleticism and the art mesh up in that way. It's very cool. Yeah. Well, and you dance at Steps PDX here in town, which is owned by a woman of color, and it's a pretty diverse program. And if y'all are interested, definitely peep when their next performance are. They have a spring or early summer one and then one at the winter time. So if you're interested, just to plug that, or if you want your kids to go to dance, Steps PDX. one thing about me is I will plug somebody. So we're going to do a quick little rapid fire questions. And this is really just to get in a little bit of a better understanding of your relationship with sharing. And so the first question is, what was the most favorite thing that anyone has shared with you?
Food.
Okay, so what was the food? What was the best food?
I really can't say. there's been so many different times where people have, whether it's just like taking me out or like introducing me to new foods that I've never experienced before. There have been like an innumerable amount of occasions. But that's probably one of my favorite experiences.
The sharing food.
Mm-hmm, sharing food.
What, is there a particular meal that, you've had that you could share with us that was, particularly fantastic? And I will say this kid is a foodie. And I love that for him and about him, though. I don't know about your cooking skills.
That's hard. I would say a restaurant that I like. I can't really think of one meal.
Okay.
But Barca Savale.
Oh, yeah, in Southeast Portland. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is a good restaurant.
Yeah. We've had some good food there.
Yeah. Well, definitely if y'all looking for a good meal, I would second that place. All right. My next rapid fire question, I guess that wasn't really rapid fire, but it's how it goes sometimes. What is the most meaningful thing that you've shared with somebody else?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. That's really subjective.
Oh, okay.
But, and you know, everyone's sharing practice and some people don't share, which is unfortunate, varies.
That's sad for them.
Yeah, it is. But something that I do, and I do it, I don't really carry cash on me just because it's not convenient. I don't really like it.
Yeah. Okay. And you're 16.
Like whenever I see someone who's in need, on the street and they need cash for whatever reason, it's not necessarily my business. I like to give them generally whatever I have, which sometimes can be a lot. And it's because, you know, I'm in a place of privilege and I can afford it. And, you know, it's really short. I'm engaging with these people for a very short amount of time, maybe even under a minute. So I never I generally don't see them again. And I don't know what the impact is. And again, like I said, that's very subjective, but
it's meaningful to you.
It's meaningful to me. And I think it's one aspect of my sharing practice, which is impactful.
Cool. I appreciate that. And I have witnessed you do this. Sometimes it makes me, a little nervous because, again, I'm a mom and I'm just a ball of anxiety, but I also find it really beautiful and thoughtful. And I think it's really selfless that you can see that sharing in that direct, immediate way, mutual aid, impactful.
Yeah, yeah. I also, there's sometimes I feel like it's almost a sense of obligation. Like I said, I have this level of privilege and I see this person who is in need and I can help them. And I know that I should. And it's kind of disheartening to know that other people feel the same way, but then they don't,
activate.
Well,
I guess we would invite all of y'all listening to activate in all of the ways. And I will say that Kid's smile here was lovely when he just said that. So really, you know, the invitation is loud and warm. Activate. What do you share most? You don't have siblings, so this will be an interesting answer.
Yeah, I you know, the first thing that came to my mind was jokes.
Oh.
I guess this, well, you know.
Oh, I like that.
Laughter is
okay. You share. You shared laughter the most.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, well, again, the sharing practice and impact, comedy, humor, it's subjective.
I would say that you do keep me laughing.
Not everyone thinks my jokes are funny.
Well, sometimes they're a little too nerdy. They're a little too where what are we doing here? What's that? Sometimes you have to think too hard, but you do keep me laughing. All right. I appreciate that. So your sharing practice is growing, yeah?
Yeah, I would say so.
I want to shift really fast, and then we're going to come right back to sharing. And something I'm asking everybody on the podcast is, what kind of radicalized you? Though I know you've been kind of raised around this, let's be do-gooders in the world kind of vibe. But what is a memory of that you can share with us that kind of inspired you to make the kind of art that you do or be active in the space that you are? Because you are also, you're a second year college student, and you are in all of these spaces trying to have your voice heard, and you definitely push back when, which I love, and I'm part of why you do that. But when, if it's this is an opportunity because you're too young and you're why? So what is something, or what was kind of the catalyst for you radicalizing or being this person that isn't an activist, but is a citizen with a voice?
Yeah. Oh my God. Maybe I shouldn't say. Maybe I shouldn't say. That sounds. I'm hearing it now.
Sometimes he likes to go to city council meetings and just be a watchful eye. This is a true story.
I would say, really. Yeah, you've been someone who's always encouraged me to share, but not only you, just the broader community as well. In America, because of scarcity, because of systemic racism, because of all these practices, you know, Black people have had to kind of depend on each other to survive. And because of our circumstances, our predicament in this country, we've had to share. And being a Black American, being raised in the Black community, that's definitely a practice I have just inherited due to social conditioning.
I think, though, I would say, in addition to social conditioning, it's a practice that is a cultural practice.
I mean, it's a good practice.
It is a practice that Black folks have been doing since forever, and it, you know, obviously originates in Africa. I just got to talk to my aunt the other day. She was in town, and she loves what we're doing at EGC, and was like, you know, this giving circle thing, we've been doing this forever. And I was like, I know. You're one of the people that, you know, inspired me to share and to be intentional in the way that we share. So yeah, it is a sacred cultural practice.
Of course. And to answer the second part of your question, in regards to pushing back, I would say you as well, again. We listeners might not know this. We are both light-skinned Black people. We have privilege.
Right. We are.
In that way. And I used to be more resistant, more reluctant in terms of using both my privilege, being light-skinned, but also my platform being an artist to talk about social issues. And to push back and to advocate for others who might not be in the same position that I am. And you have really, you know, pushed back on me in terms of that, and have really encouraged me to use my voice for the good.
It's a responsibility.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a responsibility, and it's an easy way to share. Like, I think people, especially when we're talking about privileges, people think, oh, this is going to be so complicated, it's going to put me out. No, it's not. Like, it's probably going to be one of the easiest things you do, whether it's a simple comment or a, hey, can we slow down for a second? Do we look like this? Or, hey, we're excluding this group or that group or these people. Or just, hey, this ain't it. You know, like, it's generally pretty safe for folks like us to speak up and push back. So yes, keep doing that. It's a vibe. So we're going to switch back to sharing a little bit more. You have a listserv at this point kind of vibe that you call your Auntie Nation. So Hobbs, as a Sean Hobbs, I won't use my nicknames for you. as a ballet dancer, it's a very expensive activity, after school activity, and now it's like, for you, it's like pre-professional and really trying to do all the things and travel, and but it's a really expensive activity, and me as a single parent, who, you know, I still make a modest salary but have not always made a modest salary, and have needed support to really actualize and realize your ballet goals. And so you have a group called Auntie Nation. And can you tell us a little bit about Auntie Nation?
Yeah. Auntie Nation is this very large, it's a support system. It's a group of...
How did it start?
I've been doing summer intensives for a while now, I think like for the past 5 years. And in one of the first years that I was fundraising to attend one of these programs, because they do cost
$2,000.
Yeah, upwards of $2,000.
Or more.
Or more.
DTH will be an adventure.
Yeah. We were calling upon family, friends.
My girlfriend circle.
Yeah, to step up and support. And that's kind of how it got started. And
so it's kind of like your own little mini giving circle.
Sure, yeah.
Hobbs specific. He calls it Auntie Nation. And this group of people have done what now? And how big is it?
Yeah. This group of people has helped me go to programs across the country.
What are those programs?
Like the San Francisco Ballet, Summer Intensive, Nashville Ballet, uh-huh. Nutmeg Ballet. I go to this conference every year called the International Association for Blacks in Dance. The last conference this past year was in Toronto. And so they've just really helped me actualize and realize my goals regarding dance. And I think with this wonderful group of people, I've been able to raise at least $40,000.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
And I think it consists of like a couple hundred people.
Yeah. Okay. That's really amazing. And I think, like, I want to bring this up because you do have this kind of this little small private giving circle that has helped you move forward with your goals. And it's, you know, most of the donations are what? What's the average donations you get?
I would say $50.
$50. So I think that's just, I bring this up and I'm interested in it on this platform on our Sharing Culture podcast, because I think often we forget how easy it is to share and how easy it is for us as a collective to come together and do something. Auntie Nation reminds me of my favorite story, Stone Soup. Where, you know, by myself, I might not have everything to make a delicious, you know, stew or soup for the whole community. But if I get my neighbors involved and call my friend down the street, you know, we all put an ingredient or two, all of a sudden we have something amazing. And I think when we're talking about investing both in the community and investing in individuals, you know, that really is the model that works. And this is something that has been, this is a practice. Oh my gosh. Acosta just told me the name and now I'm drawing a blank. I should have wrote it down. Story of my life. but there's a, you know, but this is a practice that's been going on for a really long time, and it's a culture practice, and it's something that works. And I think that we as a society often forget that we don't have to be the ones to solve the problem, but we have to tap in, and together we can make things happen. That's really beautiful. So tell me a little bit more about Auntie Nation. Like, how do you activate them? Do you?
Yeah, it's really, I just do individual asks. I call.
You send emails and stuff?
I call.
You call people? Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's really beautiful. I think it's also a reminder the ways that we as a collective can invest both in projects or people, and particularly youth, in ways, you know, that are meaningful and actually make things happen for people. I think we are regularly forget that it takes resources to move projects or to, you know, invest in talent. You know, as a ballet dancer, sometimes you do private lessons, the clothes are very expensive, the travel, you know, so there's all of these things that add up. And for one individual, whether it's me or it's just one person was to cover it all, that's a lot, it's too much, but it becomes manageable when there's all of these people invested in. And I love that. I love that for you. I love that for our community. And it's such a good reminder of what, you know, what can happen when we tap in and are present.
Yeah.
And you got your own little cheering squad. I love that. You're so modest. Yeah. Do you want to say anything else about Auntie Nation? Shout out to Auntie Nation.
Shout out to Auntie Nation. I don't think so. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Auntie Nation. We love you. We really do. I talk about you all the time. as a group and as individuals. And I'm really inspired by that collective giving, and it's definitely, you know, EGC believes in the collective giving, and I guess I got to make sure that our giving circle is bigger than yours. It's competition. It's not. There's enough to go around for everybody. That's the cool thing about sharing, is that when you start sharing, you realize that we actually do live in abundance in more ways than one. Good job, kid. All right. My next question for you is, what are one to three things that you would want older generations to know or hold close? What's something that you could share some wisdom or some advice with us older folk? Even those that are my age that don't want to be called old.
The first thing that came to mind was, like, this is kind of like a trope. You hear, like, stories about generational trauma where, like, people internalize things that happen to them, and then they'll project it on other people and younger people because, well, they experienced it, and I don't know, they feel like because they experienced it, then someone else has to experience.
Oh, you mean, like, workforce hazing, or do you mean something else?
Sure, yeah. I was more so thinking about, like, kind of like in the Black community, like, beatings, like, of children, but, like, this could be applied to other things.
Oh,
as well.
You mean, like, disciplining your child with violence?
Yeah.
Oh,
but like, also, I was also thinking, like, as we're talking about youth and investing in youth, you know, I know a lot of people that are preparing to go to college, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't have the means to necessarily pay for tuition. And so they're going to have to make this decision to take out loans. And it's like, you know, there are, unfortunately, a lot of millennials, that's what you guys had to do. But you have, there is this generation who is about to enter the space, and you could share and you could support them in that way, so they're not in the position that you are in. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm hearing a call to action is, hey, everybody that's a grown up, let's make sure that our kids are not being saddled with this unmanageable, bonkers debt.
Right. I mean, but, like, even just what I'm really saying is, just because you experienced it doesn't mean that younger generations have to experience it too.
Okay. Facts. Okay. So stop beating each other. No beating of the children. That is a dated and a raggedy thing.
That, like, was just an example, but yes.
Okay. No more. Okay. And really support younger people so that they're not saddled with some of the same things, i.e. student loan debt. Facts. All right. I appreciate both of those things. Anything else?
Yeah. Don't get stuck. Get close-minded.
Ooh, encouraging us to grow.
Yeah. That's something that, like, again, that's like another trope. Like, oh, you get older, you get, like,
Stuck in your ways.
Yeah. Just don't.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the ways that folks can stay young, and, you know, it's good for our brains, is to continue to try to grow and evolve. Yeah. I'd say both with text and emotions, right?
Yeah.
The tech thing. It can be complicated. is that it? You have any other things that you'd like to share with us older folks? Really, at this point, you know, the world is about to be yours. That sounds like a trope. Is that the word of this episode?
Yeah, just share. And really what I was getting at when I was saying, like, don't get stuck in your way, it's like, you know, generations, they get older, and then they start to uphold sort of the systems that they were fighting against and trying to dismantle as they were getting younger, right? And, like, we talk about this a lot in media, like, the different generations, and, like, you know, the millennials are fighting with like the boomers. Just don't. Just like stay open-minded. Because if you don't, you're gonna become the problem.
Have some tea. All right. Yeah, I don't want to become the problem. That does not sound good. I appreciate that wisdom from a 16-year-old. That could be its own podcast. Wisdom from a 16-year-old. I would listen to that. I'm actually very interested in younger voices, both their idea, your whole generation, your ideas, your experiences, and where you want things to go. Because, you know, I really am one of those people that feel that we are on borrowed time, right? Like, wherever you are borrowing this earth and this experience from the next generation. And we should be very intentional about making sure that we are doing good, not just for the generation behind us, but for, you know, 7+ generations behind us. It's a note to everybody that we can do better. And stop polluting, please. Be nicer. Stop polluting. Be kind. Sounds like a children's book. All right. You have any other wisdom or things that you would like to share about, you know, what older folks should take to heart?
I think this is the last thing that I'll say about this. Like, everyone needs to like have more integrity. I mean, like, people say that, you know, these are my values.
Oh yeah.
But it doesn't. But then your actions don't necessarily align with what you claim your values are.
Can you give us an example?
Yeah. You know, I watch YouTube. I'm a Gen Z-er.
Right. He's a YouTuber.
I'm not. No, I'm a YouTube consumer.
Okay.
And so something like, you know, I hear a lot is people will say like, you know, I value freedom, but then like you want to project your beliefs onto other people, which like inhibits their freedom. And, you know, freedom is something that's complicated. Maybe I shouldn't have used this. But what I was saying, having integrity and really ensuring that your actions align with what you claim your values are, can be applied to not only freedom, but like so many other things. And I think this doesn't apply only to older generations. This applies to my generation as well. Just kind of be more grounded in what your values are.
Yeah. One of our directors, Lillian Green, one of my favorite quotes that she says is, show me your budget and I'll show you your values, because how we spend our money, what we invest in, is one of those ways that our values are represented. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with that. I think it's a lot easier to say the things that feel good or that sound nice. But then when you start actually looking at your value, like how you live and what you're doing with your money and your time, that speaks volumes about your values. All right. I appreciate all of that wisdom from, this wonderful 16-year-old. That eye roll. You really are. You are a wonderful kid. I'm excited for all of the ways that you will grow and continue to inspire and help shape our world. And I know I'm your mom, so the eye roll is the thing. But, and you hang out with some pretty cool kids too that are also doing amazing things. So I'm inspired by your generation and your peer circle, your friend circle. Okay, so our next question, our last kind of, one of our, not our last thing, but one of our last questions in this part of the show. What's one thing that you would ask me?
How did you become an expert sharer? That's
ooh.
Not and what can others do to try to get closer to where you are in terms of sharing?
Oh, okay. I love that. 2-part question. All right. How did I become an expert sharer? Well, I grew up, I would say that my dad is an influence in some of my sharing practices, and so are many of like my community aunties and my blood aunties. And I think just the growing up in Portland, and we were talking about this earlier, you know, there's in the 90s, it was a tad bit violent here and the drug situation was loud. And so there was some visibility in terms of the disparities that I witnessed as a kid. And my dad was an insurance agent, and I used to love riding around with him, and I would see a lot of random things because of that. So I think that kind of influenced some of my, like at my core, my excitement or like that spark to share. And then I would say, you know, in high school, there's just a lot of chaos and what have you in my home life. And I really had to lean into community, both supporting for, you know, high school and just like functioning, and really to get me into college and to like move forward with that. And, you know, I'd say my community in general was really supportive of that. La Femmes Debutantes, which is I always get how many years, but you know, they've been around since forever, which is a mentorship finishing program for young Black girls. And still active here in town. Really inspired, you know, my sharing, my understanding, of community sharing. And then when I had you, the ripe old age of 21, which, you know, was a really loud and hard choice and hard experience, right? Like having a baby in college and it's a loud experience. I think having a baby in general is. But I really relied on other people to keep us moving and to support. Right. And so I had various people. I'll use Jim and Bonnie as a great example. They're neighbors of my parents who Jim was a professor, and Bonnie, she's since retired, but just this really loving, like love to take you to the library and read to you and play the piano. Folks like that inspired some of my like understanding of leaning into community. And, you know, there's different ways to share time, resources, dollars. But I think really just being a young single parent and having to like having this need and having to lean in, that inspired a lot of my sharing. My best friend is also another person who has inspired my sharing. She comes from a family of privilege. And, you know, when you were little and even still, you know, to this day has been very supportive, you know, financially, loudly, with even like, I will listen to you vent and whine and complain and brainstorm well into the night, even though I am totally over what you're saying. Shout out to Aunt Casey, your godmother goose.
You That's know what I call her.
You know, so I think there's like so many things that have inspired and people and experiences that really inspired my understanding of sharing. And I would say, you know, even your Auntie Nation. And then I think in practice, I've had so many opportunities in terms of moving a project or an idea from an idea to a project to something tangible, and always been able to move it with many hands. So kind of leaning into that stone soup, and I will wear that story out, y'all. I love that story. I have a collection. So if you're ever interested, or if you know of stone soup stories, holler at me and make sure that my collection is still growing. My goal in life is one of them is to collect every stone story out there. So it's a solid goal. Love that book. Love that story. It's a global story. So I think that, you know, it's just my life experiences and being able to see the power of community and leaning in, and what many hands can do. And then I would say in the last couple of years, both from, you know, pre-COVID, just doing various art projects in town, and then during COVID, really, you know, starting a mutual aid group, Mom Block, not by myself. There's other amazing people who started that with me that moved that idea into a space that is tangible and does great work. And then also, you know, creating Equitable Giving Circle with this dope ass team. I love our team. This is not me by myself by any means. But getting to practice this work is how I have become what I like to call an expert sharer. And I think it is one of the ways that I am able to be an activist, right? I'm able to activate and invite people along the way. I think because I love sharing, it's one of my favorite hobbies. I know people will laugh at that and be like, for real, but my two favorite hobbies are sharing and laughing. I would like to do that every day, all day long. And if that's not included in something, well, I don't know if I really want to go. It's not always true, but I do love laughing and I do love sharing. And any kind of ways that we can do that, because it doesn't always look the same. So I think that's how I've become an expert sharer. And I really do try to use sharing as an active practice, right? Like, it's not something that I just talk about. It's something that I do. And I've done it in all kinds of entities. Like, I love a clothing swap, and that's just a real easy way to share. I love, you know, collective giving, where we all put 10 bucks into a pot and we help with a situation or something. I love, you know, sharing with, you know, my girlfriend circle. All their kids know if they make a direct ask, I'm gonna support. They're probably gonna put me a little bit more on the hook, but I love it. I think that, like, being invited to share as a practice is something that inspires me, and is just, it's also fun, and it connects us to our humanity, right? Sharing as a practice is one of the most human things that you can do. And there's all kinds of ways to share, right? Whether it's storytelling, it's a physical resource, it's time, a meal, even if it's just a smile or a hello, right? There's so many, and I'm absolutely glossed over all of the wonderful ways that you can tap into sharing. But it's a practice, and I really do try to approach it as a practice. And I would say, like, the ways that people can tap into sharing and be more intentional is to make it an intentional practice, right? And in the same way that we approach, say, yoga as a practice, or somebody might approach, you know, an art practice or a writing practice, where you all, you know, I have the set time a week that I do it, or I want to always make sure that I come in and I sit down and I do my writing or whatever. Sharing should also be like that. It should be something that you've ingrained into your routine, your schedule, and it should be a habit that is absolutely practiced all the time. And I think that people need to get over their own scarcity mentality and, you know, kind of make it a game, right? Like, what was the last thing I shared? What can I share more of? And it's not always going to look the same. I think that's, like, something that people get hung up on, is they're like, well, I can't share $1,000, so count me out. Well, but could you share 10? Could you, you know, participate in volunteering? Are there other things that you can do that is sharing your time or resources? And it's going to look different for every season, right? Like, what the 19-year-old college student is sharing is going to look very, very different than maybe the rich boomer, which is going to look very different than the mother of two kids who is, like, you know, in the throes of child rearing. What these individuals can share at that given time is going to look and be different. And they're not better or worse. It's not something that it's a value judgment. And I think that a lot of people get lost in that, right? They just kind of get lost in the sauce of, like, oh, it has to be grandiose, but really it just needs to be consistent. It should be, you know, you should be sharing things that bring you joy, and you should be actively engaging with this practice and asking questions and trying to grow in it, right? Because it's also, when you think about sharing, you are innately engaging with your own humanity, because humans require each other to survive. I know I do, because I'm not a farmer, and I would die if I had to grow my own food, because I can keep my plants together, but the whole growing of produce has not been my strong suit. you cannot eat a lot of houseplants, you know? So yikes. But we need each other. And I think that we can all lean into the reality that we need each other to survive and to thrive. And when we start thinking about sharing our time and our resources and really leaning into sharing culture, leaning into the practice, it looks and feels different. And what we're able to build as a collective is become something different. And again, brings us back to our humanity. So I hope that answered your question. I love that. I love that question because I do identify as a as an expert sharer. That is my preferred title. I don't like titles or accolades too much, but expert sharer is one that I loudly identify. Awesome. Thank you for asking that. So I was supposed to finish this book before we recorded, and I unfortunately did not. So that is the way it goes. But you have read this book, and I would like for you to share our reading recommendation with our listeners today. So what is this book that you're recommending we all take some time and read?
Yeah. So the book is called Chocolate Cities, The Black Map of American Life, and it's by Marcus Anthony Hunter and Zandria F. Robinson. This book is, I don't know if some of you have heard of The Green Map. The Green Book. I'm sorry. And what it was this book for Black people who were traveling across the country specifically, and it was specifically popular during the first and second great migration from the South to the North. And it kind of, it was like a map almost of like where it's safe to go, where it's safe to stay, and where you should avoid going. And this book, Chocolate Cities, is sort of about like where Black people have resided and cultivated communities, enclaves, really, because of systemic racism, and all these other forces. And it also talks about Black life. It does touch on sharing practices. So that's sort of what it's about. When you asked me to think of a book to recommend to the audience, I didn't really think that I had, because I like to read a lot about really technical stuff. So this is like the one book that I have read that I think applies here, but
Okay. What is one of the favorite things from that book that you learned? Could you share that with us? Maybe you didn't freshly learn it, but what's something, a takeaway?
Yeah. So in the beginning of the book, the authors talk about the U.S., not if it's, you know, North and South, and that like North and South America, North and South U.S. are distinctly different. They do this throughout the book. They divide the country into like five different regions. We have up south, which is kind of northeast, and then we have down south, which is,
you mean southeast?
No.
South. Okay.
Which is like the East Coast.
Okay.
And then we have deep south, which is the deep south, west south, which is like
Texas.
Texas, Arizona, Southern California, and then we have out south, which is like the west. And then mid south. I think that's more than five. But it really talked about how, like, I mean, yes, the culture is different, and it's almost like being in six different countries. But it also talked about, like, or the authors also talked about how in history we tend to say that, like, oh, you know, the South was and still is really racist, but the North is, you know, it's been very progressive and almost like a safe haven for Black people, for migrants, for queer people, for, you know, disenfranchised people, for marginalized people. And they said, you know, the authors were like, no, this is not true. And really the country is like all these different regions are like this notion of what we've constructed of the American South being, but just in different, all in different ways.
Okay. Yeah. So it's, yeah, it talks about that. I appreciate that because it's the different regions we see and feel and experience racism differently depending on the different, you know, it's more overt in some places and what have you. And each place has its own particular relationship. Like Oregon was an exclusionary state for Black folks.
Right. And they even talk about, like, you know, I feel like when we talk about segregation, we say it, segregation is like synonymous with Jim Crow. And we'll say, we'll like use them interchangeably as if they're the same thing, which they're not. And so we'll be like, you know, Jim Crow, that's something that happened in the South. And we'll be like, segregation, it didn't happen in the North. And in the book, they really talk about like, that's not the case. That's not what was happening. Yeah.
I love it. I have only skimmed through some parts of it. So it's definitely a book that I'm excited to read. I'm a little backlogged right now in my reading.
And it really is just interesting. Like they just talk about like Black movement too, both in the sense of like, cause they do talk about the Great Migration a lot. And then like within these six different regions, like the percentage of the Black population within those regions, but they talk about, you know, Black resistance movements.
I love that. Yeah. I think leaning into Black resistance movements and the things that we can learn and the things that we can activate, you know, is a really important thing to be looking at, particularly leaning into when you look at these Black movements, it's all about action, right? It's really, really deliberate implementation. And I think something that I think we leaned into a little bit in this conversation is that that's where the magic is, right? Like we lean into the doing, tap into that participation, really amazing things can happen.
Yeah. And like I said, when you asked me to give a book recommendation, I really didn't, nothing really came to mind other than this in terms of like something that's about sharing. But and we talked about this earlier today, like it's social conditioning, it's a cultural practice, and because of these different factors, Black people have had to be dependent on each other. Mm-hmm. And so the book does illustrate this, and it does talk about sharing culture, and I would say the traditional sense that most people think of when they think of the word sharing. But also that
just like I'm sharing a cup of sugar with my neighbor kind
right.
of vibe.
Mm-hmm. But again, they do talk about resistant movements. Like one of them, they talk about the artist Big Frida and how she, so she at one point was taking up physical space. And it was, she was, you know, advocating for other queer Black individuals, specifically Black queer femmes. So they also talk about sharing in the sense of like advocating mm-hmm. for others.
Ooh, leaning back into that. Use your privilege. Yeah, I love it. Thank you for this book recommendation. I appreciate it. And it is my goal to not just skim through some parts, but to actually read it. Tough out here being a working single mother. It really is. Cool. So everybody, again, when I say the title, please read.
Yeah. So please read Chocolate Cities, The Black Map of American Life. And the authors are Marcus Anthony Hunter and Zandria F. Robinson.
Yeah. Read it. Read it and activate. All right. So I love that you bring up the From This Book movements, and EGC is definitely a movement here in Portland and trying to grow. Just in our shameless plug, EGC feeds over 325 families a week through our two food programs and are trying to activate, reactivate our housing program. And we have a robust community wellness program that includes our plant jam, our community care packages, our community events. So what do? We got Earth Day, Mother's Day, Juneteenth, back to school, and our holiday extravaganza. We've got quarterly game nights. This podcast is part of our community wellness. It's a sharing, a learning opportunity, right? Like, we're sharing information to learn, to grow, to stretch, to lean into sharing practice. And we are activating our giving circle in a different way. So we have had our reoccurring donors for the last 3 years and trying to grow that number and moving our happy hour discussion, which was at the height of COVID, made sense online, and now we're all disenfranchised with a Zoom call. And so we're moving that to an in-person activity so that we can grow our circle and support more people in real time with direct care. So I would love to invite everybody always to tap into EGC, help us continue to grow this work and, you know, lean into this movement here in Portland. This is a scalable project that has, again, direct immediate care. And it's a radical, you know, labor of love. It's a love language to community. Sharing is a love language. Actually, Mama Donna said this to me the other day, and I was like, oh, it made me feel good. So, like I said, tap in. You could donate. I will always ask for money, shamelessly. Money. Mr. Michael over at Soul Restoration said the other day, this work requires resources. And I was super obnoxious. I was like, I'm sorry. What did you say? Could you say that again? And he looked at me and was like, you heard me. And then he loudly, proudly, and importantly, you know, said again, this work, liberation works, requires resources. And shout out to Mr. Michael for saying that. Appreciate that. I love wisdom for elders. I'm gonna sprinkle that in here with this youngin. Wisdom from a 16-year-old and from one of our elders. So if you are interested in tapping into EGC Equitable Giving Circle, you can find us online at www.equitablegivingcircle.org. And it's spelled exactly like it sounds. We didn't do anything interesting there. And tap in as a reoccurring donor or a volunteer. And our last thing before we go today is we've got a homework or action task for everybody. Something that you can do to activate and practice your sharing practice, the way that we all share in community. And so my ask, and this is not going to just be super fast, so bear with us, is the ask is for everybody that's listening to tap in, you know, in addition to supporting EGC, because we do feed the youth. two-part homework assignment, but to support our young people. And so Hobbs, how can people, Sean Hobbs, I would just, so hard for me to call you one of your like public names. It is that eye roll, teenagers, I'm telling you. How can people support you and they can find you?
Yeah. Like I said, right now I am fundraising to attend the Dance Theater of Harlem Summer Intensive in July. I have a website. It is citytroll.com, and it's city, normal spelling, and then troll is T-R-O-L-L. Normal spelling as well.
Okay. Citytroll.com.
I don't know what's going on. For some reason, like, my website is not processing donations right now. It's a problem, and I can't. Anyways.
Okay, well, like, email him.
Yeah, but I do, you can PayPal me. You can.
What's your PayPal?
Venmo me. You can use my email.
Hobbs the Artist.
Which is HobbsTheArtist@gmail.com. Okay. Again, well, exactly how it sounds. Hobbs is HOBBS. I also have Venmo and Cash App.
All right. And then people can donate through IABD for a tax refund or whatever, that whole.
Right. My fiscal sponsor is the International Association for Blacks in Dance, and you can make a tax-deductible donation to me through them.
All right. Okay. So absolutely, please pop over to his website, send him an email, PayPal him. All of the information is on your website. You're also on Instagram under, what is it, City Troll? No.
Hobbs the Artist.
Oh, Hobbs the Artist. Okay. Hobbs the Artist on the Instagrams. And we also want to shout out a couple other programs in town and individuals that support our young people, particularly Black young people, Black students. And those organizations, also none of these people know that I'm shouting them out. So if you're mad about it, I'm sorry, but I don't think they will care. BEAM, Black Education Achievement Movement. They do a lot of really amazing work supporting young people. They have a summer youth program. They do an annual Black College Summit, which is really beautiful. It just happened in April. And they do the Black Baccalaureate. So check out Black Education Achievement Movement or BEAM. Also want to shout out I Am More over at Soul Restoration. Dr. Renee Mitchell does really amazing, you know, kind of art and trauma work, and has a really beautiful program, a summer program that also supports youth. And then they also have just a lot of really cool programming that they do over at Soul Restoration or through Soul Restoration. And so if you don't know about I Am More and Soul Restoration over on North Killingsworth, shout out to them. And please, you know, support dollars, move this work, y'all. Another youth organization I want to shout out is Friends of Noise, which is supporting our young people, particular teenagers, in the music scene. So supporting young folks, getting gigs, learning how to do the different things from DJing to, being sound folks. EGC had the opportunity at one of our events where we had, late teenagers that did our sound for the event, and they were fantastic. So if you need to hire a musician or want to attend a great concert, check out Friends of Noise and please support their work. Youth PDX is out in East Portland, and they have a center. They have a bunch of after school programming, some tutoring, a clothing closet. They have a bunch of really cool programming as well. So, East Portland, it's called Youth PDX, and we will link these. I've got two more, but we will link these in this show's comments so that it's easy for all y'all to find. Operation Back to School is another great organization that, supports literally, I feel like thousands of students with backpacks, as school supplies every year, and does, you know, supports in other ways throughout the year. So that is another great program if you are interested in backpacks or back to school and helping, making sure our kids have supplies. Holler at Operation Back to School. And I will shamelessly shout out Steps PDX again, because I love what's happening at Steps, and I'm excited to be a part of that community. So if you've got a student that is interested in dance, or you just want to support the arts in our community, dance in our community, shout out to Steps and support. I'd say Jefferson Dance is another really amazing dance program for our young people here in town. So those are just a couple places and spaces that you can actively support. And when I say support, I do mean send a donation. I do mean attend one of their events. I do mean sign up as a volunteer. Pop over to their website, see the ways that you can participate, and be an active participant with us. When we say we're building community, it requires lots of hands to actually build and to move things. So absolutely, please tap in and go out and share this podcast, share your magic, share your resources, and share a smile. Thanks for listening.